Hello, it is Monday, the 29th of June. Welcome to Korea 24. I'm your host, Andrew Jung. The Lee Jae-myung administration announced that chipmakers Samsung and SK Hynix will spend more than quadrillions of won or trillions of U.S. dollars in AI-related investments to cement South Korea's status as a tech powerhouse. More on that in our news briefing and our in-depth segments. Also, Hong Myung-bo, the head coach of the men's national football team, resigned after his team failed to advance to the World Cup's knockout stage. We discuss that in today's sports roundup. And a South Korean court made headlines today after releasing a simplified court ruling for a plaintiff who had intellectual disabilities. All that and more on Korea 24.
Yes, I... 대한민국의 미래를 위해라고 외치면 파이팅으로 모두 함께 한 마음 한 뜻으로 외쳐주시기 바랍니다. 자, 대한민국의 미래를 위해 파이팅! 자, 다시 한번 하겠습니다. 대한민국의 미래를 위해 파이팅! 고맙습니다.
President Lee Jae-myung, joined by South Korea's tech titans, announced massive new investments in semiconductors, physical AI, and AI data centers. The president said the three mega projects are aimed at securing South Korea's overwhelming competitiveness in advanced industries as well as achieving balanced regional development. Lee, Samsung Electronics Executive Chairman Lee Jae-yong, and SK Chairman Choi Tae-won raised their fists and chanted for the future of South Korea. For more on the investments and other major headlines of the day, we have in the studio with us Deputy Editor-in-Chief of KBS World's English News Service, Kim In-kyung. Hello, In-kyung.
Hello, Andrew.
The president held a nationally televised event which had been hyped for weeks at the presidential office today. How much are South Korean conglomerates investing in the so-called three mega projects?
They will invest quadrillions of won or trillions of U.S. dollars in semiconductors, AI data centers, and physical AI. Here's what Samsung Electronics Executive Chairman Lee Jae-yong said.
Samsung Group 내부용 AI 데이터 센터와 함께
Samsung Group will concentrate the investments in robotics alongside the AI data center for internal Samsung Group use in Gumi, North Gyeongsang Province. We'll focus our investments in Ulsan, South Gyeongsang Province. For next generation, all solid-state batteries and the batteries used in energy storage systems, or BESS, which are essential for renewable energy.
SK Group is planning to invest a total of around 1 quadrillion won, or around 650 billion U.S. dollars, to establish AI data centers throughout the country, while spending 11 quadrillion won to beef up its semiconductor production capacity. This is what SK Group Chair Choi Tae-won said.
SK가 만드는 AI 데이터 센터는 대한민국의 AI national infrastructure가
SK's AI data centers can potentially become South Korea's national AI infrastructure. They will serve as the heart, driving robots and physical AI, while also acting as a catalyst for establishing an entirely new ecosystem of upstream and downstream industries, spanning components, equipment, and software related to AI data centers.
The science minister explained during the event that 500 trillion won will be spent on the creation of AI data centers through 2029, and the total amount will rise to 1 quadrillion by 2035. According to the trade minister, a total of 800 trillion won will be invested in the creation of a new semiconductor cluster in the nation's southwestern Jeolla region, which will house four new memory chip fabrication plants. That includes a new memory complex Samsung intends to build in the city of Gwangju, with the group allocating more than 2.6 quadrillion won altogether for AI projects. The president, he said, the three mega investment projects will promote balanced national development, expanding the country's industrial bases beyond the Seoul area and the southeastern Gyeongsang region. He said South Korea had to pick and choose when it was developing because it didn't have enough funds. That was inevitable, but the country has become too Seoul-centered, and now that must change.
But the main opposition slammed the investment. What's the People Power Party saying?
The PPP is calling the investment a declaration of war against market principles. Mayor-elect of Daegu Chu Kyung-ho and other municipal heads and lawmakers based in the Daegu North Gyeongsang region held an emergency press conference on Monday and said the decision amounted to regional discrimination and politically driven industrial policy. They're saying the government's plan is political intervention in industrial site selection and said it would undermine global competitiveness and harm regional economies.
Let's now turn to the World Cup. Men's national football coach Hong Myung-bo has resigned a day after South Korea was officially knocked out of the 2026 FIFA World Cup. What did he say?
He apologized for failing to get one of the 8 tickets to play in the round of 32 given to the best third-place teams and said all responsibility lies with him. Let's take a listen to his news conference at the team's training site in Zapopan, West Mexico, Sunday.
First and foremost, I'd like to sincerely apologize to the people who love Korean football and have always supported our national team. Today, I'm stepping down as head coach of the national football team. I wasn't able to deliver the results the public had hoped for. That responsibility lies entirely with me as head coach. I'm truly grateful to the players, the coaching staff, and everyone who worked tirelessly behind the scenes for the team.
South Korea finished third in Group A, picking up 3 points from a win over Czechia in back-to-back 1-0 losses to Mexico and South Africa. There was a sliver of hope that it would sneak into the round of 32 as one of the 8 best third-place finishers, but that hope was dashed on Saturday after results elsewhere, including a win by Congo over Uzbekistan, wiped out South Korea's chances of advancing.
There's a lot of disappointment in South Korea. Fans have voiced their anger, and the president has demanded changes.
That's right. In a post on X on Monday, he said he was perplexed by the national football team's unexpected elimination from the group stage. He said World Cup participation involves a significant amount of taxpayer money and national support and called on the sports ministry to investigate the cause of the national team's early exit. He also pledged reforms for sports governing bodies. This was South Korea's 12th consecutive FIFA World Cup appearance, and many considered the roster the most talented in the team's history, with captain Son Heung-min, Paris Saint-Germain midfielder Lee Kang-in, and Bayern Munich defender Kim Min-jae. The backlash is sharper because this was Hong's second time leading the men's national team at the World Cup, and his 2014 run was also lackluster after a tie and 2 losses in the group round. South Korea's FIFA world ranking has now fallen to 32nd, its lowest ranking in 4.5 years.
In international news, the death toll from powerful earthquakes that struck Venezuela last Wednesday has risen to 1,450. In-young, what can you tell us?
Venezuela's parliamentary president Jorge Rodriguez said the number of people killed in the back-to-back earthquakes reached 1,450 as of Sunday, up 20 from the day before. Authorities said more than 3,000 people had been injured and about 12,000 had been displaced. But unofficial estimates put the number of missing people at around 70,000, while the UN Development Program estimated the disaster caused about $6.7 billion in economic losses, equivalent to about 6% of Venezuela's gross domestic product. Rescue operations remain underway, with about 2,000 rescue personnel from 24 countries and more than 130 search dogs taking part. Several survivors have been pulled alive from the rubble in recent days. The South Korean government said Friday that it would provide $5 million in humanitarian assistance to support relief and recovery efforts.
Shifting gears to the weather, the National Weather Agency issued a citywide heat advisory for Seoul on Monday. What triggered the alert?
A heat advisory was issued for the entire capital because the heat index, also known as the freeze-like temperature, is expected to top 33 degrees Celsius for at least 2 consecutive days. Smaller localized advisories were issued earlier this month for eastern and western Seoul, but this marks the first time the alert covers the entire city. Heat wave advisories have also been issued for nearby regions, including parts of Gyeonggi Province, Incheon, and North Chungcheong Province.
And what's causing this hot stretch of weather?
According to the Korea Meteorological Administration, the hot conditions are being driven by the country sitting on the edge of a high-pressure system. For the time being, afternoon temperatures are expected to peak at or above 30 degrees, but the freeze-like temperature, which factors in the actual temperature as well as relative humidity, will feel closer to around 31 degrees.
And moving on, workers at Kakao, the operator of South Korea's leading messaging service, took a day off in mass numbers after labor and management failed to reach an agreement on bonus payments. Can you give us the details?
Sure. Workers from Kakao and four of its affiliates participated in log-off day on Monday by taking a simultaneous leave of absence and logging off from internal networks. The Kakao union said around 2,100 of its members would participate. The collective action comes after the workers from Kakao, Kakao Pay, Kakao Enterprise, DK Tekken, and XL Games took part in a partial strike for 4 hours on June 10th and rallied near the company building in Pangyo, Gyeonggi Province. Since the talks fell through in May, labor and management remained divided over the allocation of bonuses, with the union demanding up to 14% of last year's operating profit.
And that's it for today's news briefing. Thank you, Ingyo.
Thank you, Andrew.
Hello, my name is Anna Yates Liu, assistant professor from the Department of Korean Music at Seoul National University. You are now listening to Korea 24 on KBS World Radio.
On Monday, President Lee Jae-myung unveiled the government's three mega projects initiative, which aims to strengthen South Korea's competitiveness in advanced technologies and cement its status as a tech powerhouse in the era of artificial intelligence. Lee described semiconductors, physical AI, and AI data centers as the three pillars of the country's AI-driven transformation. As part of the initiative, Samsung Electronics and SK Hynix will build at least two chip-making plants apiece for 800 trillion won, or about $520 billion, in the Honam region. The two companies will also invest an additional 81 trillion won in the Chungcheong region. To dive deeper into this plan and its impact on the South Korean economy, we are joined on the line by economics professor Yang Jun-suk from the Catholic University of Korea. Hello, Professor Yang.
Hello.
So what's your overall assessment of South Korea's three new, quote, mega projects, and what stood out to you the most?
Okay, well, the government had put a lot of emphasis into this. The presentation was made by relevant ministers of ministries rather than a person who was lower down on the bureaucratic scale. President himself made the opening statements, and they brought out the chairman of Samsung and SK Hynix. So this was a big planned event. You may even say it was a show event. It looked like the presentation that they made was closer to a vision statement rather than a concrete investment plan. Now, a vision statement is a good thing. It tells you where you want to go. So it is something that's necessary, and I think it fulfilled some of its goal as something inspirational. But as an investment plan, I think we needed more concrete details, and hopefully the relevant ministries, as well as Samsung and SK Hynix, will release a more concrete version of the presentation in the near future. Now, the problem is, while it does bring up a rosy goal that Korea should strive for, it doesn't necessarily point out how to get there. And it's not only going to take money, but it's going to take regulatory reform. It's going to involve not only investment in physical capital, but also making the region around those facilities a better place to live so that people would want to go there. And these problems did come up in the discussion that they had after the presentation. It's in some ways a chronic problem in Korea. You deal with the direct factors, but not the relevant indirect factors that can make or break an investment. But overall, I think a lot of care went into the presentation. It's just that some of the details were sadly lacking.
You might have mentioned some answers to this next question, but what impact do you expect these projects to have on the South Korean economy?
Okay, well, let's deal with the AI aspect first. As far as the AI aspect goes, Korea is probably a third in rank for AI technology. I think we're ahead of most European countries and ahead of most Asian countries as well. The only two countries which are ahead of Korea in terms of technology is U.S. and China, but they're really, really far up ahead. So even though Korea may be considered third, we have a lot of catching up to do. And if these investments go through, and if the research and development follows these investments, then I think there's a good chance that Korea will become maybe still third, but somewhere closer to where the U.S. and China are, and could compete with Chinese and American AI companies. Having said that, in terms of, say, regional economy, which was another goal of this plan, in the first few years, the regional economy will experience a boom because there will be a lot of construction going on. Mm. In fact, when I read the newspaper this morning, if you talk about stock prices, the construction companies in these regions were doing better than Samsung and Hynix, at least in terms of much the stock prices went up in the last couple of days. This is the reason why regional governments, regional politicians welcome these type of projects, because they know that while they're in the building process, the economy in the region will be picked, will be very active, and there will be a lot of jobs available. Where the key test comes in is after everything is built. Will these facilities be profitable? Will it be efficient? Will it be productive? That we will have to see. But there are some concerns that came up during the presentation. If you're investing in AI, what's the three most important factors are electricity, water, and people. Now, they talked a lot about how they're going to provide electricity and water to these facilities. They also talked a lot about how to make it better for people living there, so a lot of people will move to the new cluster in the Honam area. But I think they're still concerned that perhaps the government will not provide enough attention and enough emphasis on the regional living conditions, so that there are concerns that even if the facilities are built, will they be able to attract enough good people, good technicians, so that the facilities can be fully utilized. So we'll have to wait and see more details on these type of let's call it cultural and living infrastructure.
So a lot of details are missing, and time will tell whether or not this is a good decision. But as part of the three mega projects initiative, Samsung Electronics and SK Hynix plan to each build at least two brand new massive chip fabrication sites in South Korea's southwest region, also known as the Honam area. This will be part of a broader project to build a chip production ecosystem, with the initial investment in the Honam area expected to be around 800 trillion won. That's around 520 billion U.S. dollars. President Lee pointed to the southwestern region as an area ripe for such investments, citing abundant water resources. This is something that Professor Yang just mentioned, and strong renewable energy potential. Lee also stressed that the increasing development outside the Seoul metro area has become a necessary national survival strategy. Professor Yang, you touched on this a little bit, but what's your take on this overall view, and how effective do you think it could be in achieving balanced growth across South Korea's six regions?
Okay, well, it was interesting to see that while the government officials emphasized the southern area for investment, emphasizing how they're going to produce electricity, how they're going to produce water. When the chairman of Samsung and SK gave their talk, they emphasized not only the southern Honam region, but also the Yongin cluster, one that's closer to the Seoul metropolitan area. And that's because of the third factor that I talked about earlier, which is people. People do not want to live in a separated area. They want to live in metropolitan cities. They want to live where a lot of their working partners are, not only in terms of family, but also people who are working in the same area. So they will be in the semiconductor industry, academics, business people. And those factors currently are lacking in the Hunan area. So you have to make the area more attractive for people to go into. And that's why this whole metropolitan area is more popular for making these type of investments. So first priority will be to provide enough cheap electricity and water so that it can overcome some of these weaknesses dealing with attracting people. And then in the longer term, as I said in the last question, you need to emphasize not only physical manufacturing infrastructure like roads or factories, but also, say, cultural and living infrastructure, for example, hospitals, schools, parks, those type of areas, so that you can attract people who want to live and build up a critical mass so that they will have enough interaction with other people in that area so that that region can develop independently of Seoul.
Perhaps that missing link that Professor Yang mentioned is why this plan to build a semiconductor cluster in the Honam region has drawn sharp criticism from the political opposition. The main opposition People Power Party accused the investment plan of being a, quote, politically motivated one. Representative Cheng Jeom-sik, the Conservative Party's floor leader, said that the investment plan looks to have been forced, meaning the government nudged and pressed Samsung and SK Hynix into going along with this plan. President Lee Jae-myung has said that the company's needs overlapped with the government's desire to revive growth outside the Seoul metro area. Professor Yang, what do you make of this accusation?
Okay, well, I think there is a point, but it can be overcome. And what I mean by that, well, if you look at, say, a semiconductor cluster in the United States, they're all mostly based on cities. So you have Silicon Valley that's based around the San Francisco area and Stanford University. You have Route 128 area in Boston, where it's centered around Boston and MIT and Harvard. You have Dulles Airport area near Washington, D.C., where there's a lot of professionals available because it's closer to Washington, D.C. area, coupled with cheap electricity and water from Virginia State. And then you have Texas, centered around San Antonio, where you have a fairly major city in San Antonio and also University of Texas. This Honam area does not have that, but it can be built. Problem is, will they build it? And I think that's the critical question. I think the government is well prepared to invest in physical infrastructure like highways, high-speed rails, and so on. But will they build, say, more hospitals, more schools? Will they build, will they help the universities there become bigger? And that was asked actually during the discussion. And I got to admit, I was a bit disappointed because the government's answer does not seem to be that positive, that enthusiastic, at least compared to some of the physical infrastructure investment that they emphasized earlier in the presentation.
So I guess it's a question about whether or not this investment will hinge on the talent pool available in that particular area. And Professor Yang mentioned building hospitals and schools and other infrastructure needed to attract those people. But you might have answered this already, but will these projects help South Korea stay ahead in the global AI race?
As I said, Korea is well positioned. We, in terms of technology, I would say that we're ranked third, even though we are far behind the U.S. and China. We have semiconductor production facilities. We mentioned AI robots. When Jensen Huang came to visit Korea a few weeks ago, he was enthusiastic about expanding AI into humanoid robots, automation. Korea is well positioned for that as well, because Korea is the largest user of automation and manufacturing. So Korea is well placed. Problem is, there's a lot of barriers as well. It's surprisingly, the biggest barriers are actually regulatory. So if you talk about construction, one of the reasons why the Yongin cluster is taking long to build is that there's a lot of building-related regulations, which are slowing down the construction process. If you're talking about, say, software, in order to build up AI, you need to have a lot of data, the big data sets and so on. And Korea's data usage regulations are actually fairly tough. It's as strong or stronger than the European GDPR. Unless you deal with these regulatory factors as well, and not only in terms of construction and physical investment, but also information related, and this came up during the discussion as well, unless we free up those regulations, putting this money into physical infrastructure is not going to be enough.
But as a final thought, Professor Yang, do you have any advice you would like to give to the government with regard to these mega projects?
Okay, well, as I said, just putting money into it and building physical infrastructure is not enough. You've got to change the laws, change the regulations so that you can build faster. You can be more flexible about what you build, not only in terms of factories and buildings, but also what kind of goods and services that you can introduce. And also, you have to loosen up the regulations dealing with data if you want to succeed in AI. Today's presentation was mostly concentrated on the physical factors as well as infrastructure that's directly related to production facilities, but you need more than that. And we need some concrete plans on how to provide those reforms. Also, we're talking about investment that would take somewhere between 5 to 10 years. So you need to make sure that these type of policies will continue, not only under this president, but under the next president. And Korea has, frankly, not been very good at maintaining longer term plans. When a new president comes in, the plans under the old president are swept under the rug. So we need to have kind of mechanism to guarantee that whatever guarantees that are made by this administration will be kept not only in this administration, but the next administration.
So we need to attract talent, reform regulations, and ensure political continuity. That was Professor Yang Jun-suk from the Catholic University of Korea. Thank you, Professor Yang.
Thank you.
And that's it for today's in-depth news analysis.
Welcome to the Korea 24 stock market update. The benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index dipped 16.56 points, or 0.20% on Monday, to close at 8,394.65. The tech-heavy KOSDAQ gained 69.20 points, or 8.13%, to close at 920.57. You can check Korean stock market updates at world.kbs.co.kr.
Next, we are joined by Daniel Che for our Korea Trending segment. For this part of the show, we check out some of the most viewed stories and issues covered by Korean news outlets, handpicked by the Korea 24 team. Hello, Daniel.
Hello, Andrew.
So, what's our top trending story today?
So as we move past the midpoint of 2026, some are already seeking to find what's there to look forward to come next year. One bright spark, it seems, more off days or holidays.
So it sounds like more holidays are going to be placed right next to weekends. I recall 2017 being a good year, but tell us more.
So as a whole, there will be more off days or holidays than this year, and that's based on figures unveiled by the Korea Aerospace Administration, which announced these numbers on Monday. CASA data published annually under the astronomy and SpaceX serves as the standard guideline for producing Korean calendars.
So let's dive right into what most listeners would love to learn more about. Exactly how many days do we get to skip work?
So in total, 72 days off, including Sundays for workers on a five-day work week. If you include Saturdays for those working 6 days a week, it comes to 119. There could have been more if it weren't for about half a dozen holidays that fall on Saturdays. Not only that, there will be 10 holiday periods lasting 3 days or more.
I think a lot of listeners want to be sure that these numbers are set in stone. So, Dan, no changes in these figures?
Well, highly unlikely, it seems. But just to be sure, one can check for detailed information or changes or updates, if there are any, in the official government gazette at Gwanbo, as in GWANBO.GO.KR, or the Korea Aerospace Administration website at casa.go.kr. But the purpose of the data is not solely to provide info for holiday planning. It is designed to help ensure precise dates and seasonal divisions based on astronomical calendrical calculations.
Yeah, I was wondering why a space agency was providing these figures. But let's move on to our next story.
A Seoul court issued a very unique court ruling. This one was made to be easy to read in consideration of a plaintiff with an intellectual disability after the plaintiff filed an administrative suit against a district office that refused to register the plaintiff as a person with intellectual disability.
So we all know that court rulings and orders are very hard to read. So I must ask, is this the first time an, quote, easy-to-read version was issued?
Actually, no. The first one was back in 2022. That was for a plaintiff with hearing disability. According to the Seoul Administrative Court on Monday, the ruling in favor of a plaintiff with an intellectual disability in a lawsuit filed against a Yangcheon district office issued last Thursday is the country's, the first of its kind in terms of easy-to-read court ruling catering to an individual with an intellectual disability. It rewrites a complex legal judgment so that a plaintiff with such disabilities can easily understand the outcome of the suit.
I think the court deserves some credit for doing what it did, but how is this latest easy-to-read version different from conventional rulings?
The easy-read version is only 5 pages long. The original ruling is over 20 pages. It explained the result and the reasons for the court's decision in plain language, using short sentences, summaries, and illustrations outlining the course of the trial. The formal ruling used usual legal phrasing, such as the defendant's decision not to recognize a plaintiff's disability status is revoked, while the easy-read version simplified the language and reads, the plaintiff won, the district office's decision is canceled, the district office must now help the person with a disability.
Less is more and shorter is often better. So will there be more such ruling readouts that are easier to read going forward?
It seems likely that courts will provide plaintiffs who need such versions with a separate easy-to-understand ruling alongside the official written judgment. The Seoul Administrative Court said this was part of changes implemented under the Supreme Court's new guidelines on judicial support for vulnerable groups. In terms of workload, the court said the use of artificial intelligence made the production process, which even involved illustrations, cheaper and faster and easier.
Hoping that rulings become easier to read, because I think that will benefit everyone. But now to our final story of the day. What do you have?
South Korea is set to designate a dinosaur fossil discovered on the Korean peninsula as a natural monument.
Dinosaurs. I'm a Jurassic Park kid. So I am very interested. But what dinosaurs are we talking about?
So according to the Korea Heritage Service, which announced a plan to confer the designation on Monday, the dinosaur fossil was found between 2000 and 2004 during an investigation of a dinosaur egg fossil site along the seacoast in Poseong, South Jeolla Province. These skeletal fossils are from an ornithopod dinosaur, and these are the types of two-legged dinosaurs with bird-like feet and hips.
And why did the experts deem this worthy of this designation?
Well, the agency says these are the first skeletal remains from an ornithopod ever discovered on the Korean Peninsula. This particular dinosaur belonged to the Orodromin subfamily, one rarely found in Asia, providing important evidence of dinosaur migration between North America and Asia during the Cretaceous period. And it's named the Koreanosaurus bosongensis. It also became Korea's first indigenous dinosaur to bear the country's name in its scientific classification.
I'm going to botch the pronunciation as well. Koreanosaurus bosongensis, I think. Okay. What else other than this dinosaur fossil have been designated as natural monuments?
Well, two more have been announced by the KHS. The skeletal fossil of a pig-nosed turtle discovered in Yeosu, South Jeolla Province in 2006, and a honeycomb weathered rock formation in Tongyeong, South Gyeongsang Province, which spans the southern coastal cliffs of Su Island and the southern side of a nearby islet. The Korea Heritage Service will review opinions from various sectors during a 30-day notice period before finalizing the designations following deliberation by the National Heritage Committee.
So a turtle and a rock formation. Interesting. But that's all we have for today's edition of Korea Trending. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is Broadway actor Hwang Joo-min. Now you're listening to KBS World Radio.
Time now for Sports Roundup, your weekly look at all the action from the big wins and tough losses to the stories on and off the field. Joining us now on the line to help us do that is Yu-Gi-O, the sports writer for Yonhap News. Gio, great to have you here again on the show.
Yeah, it's great to be here too.
Our first story is, of course, the Korean national football team. Hong Myung-bo resigned as South Korea's head coach after the team was eliminated from the group stage. They finished, of course, third in Group A and did not get the help they needed from other teams. Obviously, this is a huge disappointment that the team didn't reach the knockout stage, but Hong couldn't get them over the hump for the second time. He was the coach for the 2014 World Cup. Gio, you predicted this last week, if I'm remembering correctly. You predicted Korea would not reach the knockout stage after its loss to South Africa. And Hong Myung-bo's resignation, I guess, was expected.
Yeah, I guess the writing was on the wall. You know, even if Korea had somehow qualified for the round of 32, I think it would have been difficult for Hong to have continued on as Korea's head coach, regardless of how far the team would go. And, you know, after what transpired Sunday morning, our time over here, again, this seemed like a foregone conclusion, right? You know, Hong was signed through the 2027 Asian Cup early next year in Saudi Arabia, but it was just not, you know, not tenable to keep him on the board, having him around as the coach of this national team. So he announced his resignation in the early hours of Monday, just about half an hour, half past midnight in Korean time. He did not take questions from the media out in Mexico. He read from a prepared statement as he apologized to the fans for not living up to their expectations. And he offered to take the responsibility, the full responsibility for Korea's group stage exit. And he said he made every decision, right or wrong, with the greater good of Korean football on his mind. And he said he would continue to cheer for the national team so that they can bounce back and regain the trust and love of the fans. And, you know, the Korean team, you know, there's a lot of nervous two or three days over there, right? You know, they nervously waited for the final group matches to finish up. again, did not get the help that they needed on the final day, with Croatia defeating Ghana and DR Congo defeating Uzbekistan. So, you know, it really should not have ended up in this situation in the first place. But, you know, here they were, keeping their fingers crossed, but the matches did not play out the way they hoped.
There will, of course, be some soul-searching, regrets, mistakes will be reviewed, and what-ifs will be discussed. But where did it all go wrong with this squad?
You know, I think a lot of people would point to the hiring of Hong as head coach back in July 2024. Of course, this was his second chance as the national team boss. And, you know, a lot of people now would say, maybe with a little bit of a benefit of the hindsight, maybe he should not have been brought back at all after he could not take the team out of the group stage back in 2014. Now, the situations, you know, they were a little different this time around. You know, back in 2014, he was thrust into the job just about a year out before the World Cup. This time, he was given about 2 years to prepare for the tournament. You know, some might have felt that he deserved some benefit of the doubt from 2014. But once again, you know, Hong could not capitalize on his second chance, despite giving them, you know, given ample time to build his team and having, you know, which a lot of people say, the generational talent on his hand. And really no excuse for this group of players to score two goals in three matches. So I don't think the players should get off the hook right away. But obviously the coach takes the fall here, but the players themselves, you know, they, regardless of the tactical, lack of tactical acumen on the part of Hong, the players did not get it done on the field.
So the question remains, though, what's next for the national team?
Yeah, so there's going to be some leadership vacuum at the Korea Football Association. Obviously, the national team boss is gone, and KFA president Chung Mong-gyu has already offered to resign after the World Cup. So he made this decision before the start of the tournament. This is in late May. So once the tournament ends, either, you know, I don't know if he meant the end of Korea's run at the tournament or the, you know, after the final of the tournament, either way, he's going to be gone pretty soon. So there will be some chaotic times, I think, without the president of the KFA and the head coach of the top men's national team. And per FIFA international match calendar, we've got four matches, or at least four matches can be scheduled between September 21st and October 6th. And two more between November 9th and 17th. So these are the opportunities for Korea to get ready for the Asian Cup early next year. But I think there's a really good chance that Korea will not be able to name a full-time replacement for Hong within the next, less than 3 months, really. So, you know, I think the national team may have to lean on a caretaker boss, at least for the four matches coming up in September.
We go to some more positive news in golf, where Ryu Hae-ran won her first LPGA major title today over her compatriot Yoon-hee Na. Ryu was 10 strokes behind Yoon after the first round, but emerged with a two-shot victory at the end of the KPMG Women's PGA Championships in Minnesota. Gio, give us the details on Ryu's major breakthrough.
Yeah, so this is a breakthrough indeed, and a pretty unlikely victory. After she was down by 10, like you said, after the first round, shot a 73 to Yoon's 63. You know, the cut was plus two, and Ryu Hae-ran after one round was at plus one. So she was really trying to make the cut, you know, playing the weekend, but she ended up winning the tournament, put together a huge rally over the final three rounds, really, to win her first major title out at the Hazeltine National Golf Club in Cheska, Minnesota. She held off for Yoon-hee Na by two shots at 13 under par. So $1.95 million for Yoon, by far the largest sum for a single tournament victory in her career. She's got four wins. You know, she was the Rookie of the Year back in 23, has a win in each of her first four seasons on the tour. She had a one-shot lead going into the final round. The third time, she had at least a share of the lead entering the final round of a major. And this is the first time she successfully closed out the deal. And she and Brooke Henderson of Canada were neck and neck down the stretch before Henderson played her way out of contention with a bogey at the 14th hole. And it was Yoon-hee Na and Davy Weber from the Netherlands also making a bit of a run, but they could not catch Ryu Hae-ran at the end.
$1.95 million. That is a lot of money. You, of course, missed about a month starting in May with an injury. And I guess it's safe to say that she apparently used that time very wisely.
Yeah, you know, she said it was worth it. You know, she had to miss the U.S. Open, U.S. Women's Open earlier this month while coming back from a bit of an abdominal injury that she wanted to address before the things got a lot worse. So she went back, she came back home to Korea after finishing second at a tournament in mid-May. So she kind of rested, you know, didn't really train much, enjoy some quality time with her family and friends, enjoy some home cooking from her mom. And then she came back all fresh and ready to grind once again. You know, she also made a pretty bold decision to switch putters mid-tournament. Mm-hmm. You know, after one round, the first round didn't go well. She had 73, I think she had 36 putts, which is a lot. And she went back to the putter that helped her finish second at the tournament right before she hit the sidelines in May. And she ended up going 64, 68, 70 the rest of the way with, the putter really doing a lot of heavy lifting, especially mm-hmm. in the final round.
We all need some refreshment from time to time, and sounds like a break served Yuhaeran very well. But we now go to our final and my favorite sport, baseball. The KBO season is entering the final full week before the All-Star break, and teams in the middle of the standings will try to make one final push in the first half. Gio, give us a preview of the week ahead.
Yeah, so the All-Star break in the KBO starts on July 10th. The teams will play 6 games this week and just 3 more next week before hitting the pause button. And the Hanwha Eagles, they moved back into a tie for 5th place with the Doosan Bears after sweeping the SSC Landers in their weekend series. So both the Eagles and the Bears are right at 500, 37-37-2 for the Eagles, 38-38-2 for the Bears. Now, the Eagles have a bit of a tough week ahead. They're taking on third place Katie Woods for 3 games, and then your league-leading LG Twins for 3 more on the weekend. And the Bears, in the meantime, they get 2 teams near the bottom of the standings, 3 against the Lotte Giants and 3 more against last place Kiwoom Heroes. Now, the Katie Woods, they seeded second place to Samsung Lions after getting swept by the Lions over the weekend. The Lions have won 4 straight. And the Lions will try to keep that streak going as they've got 6 games coming up against the sub-500 clubs, 3 against the NC Dinos and 3 more against the Landers. Speaking of, the Landers are spinning really out of control. They've won just one of the past 6 series. They've, you know, not that long ago, it seems like they were in third place and they've fallen to all the way to 9th place right now. Now, the LG Twins, in the meantime, they should become the first team to reach 50 wins this week. Mm-hmm. And, you know, historically, teams that do that, you know, teams that reach the 50-win plateau first, they've gone on to win the pennant about 70% of the time in league history. So pretty good history on the LG Twins side as they look to get to the half-century mark in victories.
Wishing better luck to the suffering fans in Incheon first, rooting for the Landers. But as for my Twins, I should say 70%, of course, is too low for comfort. But that's it for today's sports segment. That was Yoo Ji-ho, the sports writer for Yonhap News. Thank you, Gio.
Okay, thanks for having me.
And this is where we wrap up today's show. Again, you can always listen to Korea 24 on various apps, KBS Kong, KBS World Radio, KBS World Radio on air at 7:10 p.m. Korea Standard Time every weekday. We'll be back tomorrow. I've been your host, Andrew Jung. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
KBS World Radio strives to promptly update our listeners on safety procedures during emergency situations. The following are recommended guidelines to follow in the case of an earthquake. During an earthquake, you are advised to stay indoors. Going outside could be extremely dangerous, as you could be hit by shattering windows or falling signs. While indoors, turn the gas off and go under a table or desk to protect your head. Refrain from using gas or electricity until after it is confirmed to be safe. If you're in an elevator, promptly get off and seek shelter. If you're on the street, cover your head with your hands or bags and stay away from brick walls and gates. If you're driving, stop your car on the right side of the road. Before seeking shelter, close your car windows and leave your keys in the ignition, then get out of your vehicle. Once the ground stops shaking, request help for the injured while remaining mindful of possible aftershocks. Please check our website at world.kbs.co.kr for up-to-date information and procedures.
KBS World Radio.